There are four attachment styles, which is anxious, avoidant also called fearful avoidant, and secure.
Emily Freeman is a dating and attraction coach who helps men build confidence and attract their dream woman.
And they all come from a subconscious fear, or a fear of abandonment, which would be your anxious attachers, a fear of intimacy, which is avoidant, fear of rejection, which is anxious avoidant or fearful avoidant, and then secure is comfortable with intimacy. They're comfortable with conflict resolution. They're comfortable sharing their life with someone. The percentage of people who are true secures is...
Tribe listeners, I have an extremely exciting announcement for all of you. Do you want to come hang out with Cody Sanchez, David Osborne, David Green, Rich Roll, and even yours truly down in Austin, Texas? Well, let's do it. May 1st, 2nd, and 3rd, for the first time ever, GoBundance, the exclusive millionaire membership group, is opening up an event to anyone, man, woman, millionaire, or not, and we're calling it the Austin Entrepreneurial Summit. At the AES, you'll meet all those people I mentioned, plus GoBundance members on both the men's and women's side, and I'll be there hanging out the entire time. Every event I've ever attended for GoBundance has given me a disproportionate return on the money spent and the time spent to get there. And this is the biggest one that GoBundance has ever done. So if you're a member, not a member, and you're looking to supercharge the second part of your year 2024, this event in May is a great way to get that all kickstarted. Go to GoBundance.com/AES right now for early bird pricing for members and guests. And warning, the power of GoBundance events is that it holds you accountable long after you're gone to achieving whatever goals you've set. So this event will change your life. GoBundance.com/AES. I'll see you there. Let's get back to the show. What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Tribe of Millionaires podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Gruber. And today's guest, Emily Freeman, is a dating and attraction coach who helps men build confidence and attract their dream woman. She's helped public figures, CEOs, founders, executives, and physicians worldwide in her coaching programs get the love they've always desired. Her mission, her passion, is to help you transform your life. And now, also, she has started to work with women. So either or. Or follow her on IG at Emily Freeman Coaching. Emily, it's a true pleasure to have you.
It is so great to be here. Thank you for having me on the show.
There's a phrase going around out there that I hear quite a bit, and I want to hear your interpretation of it, your definition of it, and that is a high value man. Ooh. What is a high value man, and why is that phrase everywhere right now?
Yeah, well, it's used in a number of different contexts, but the way that I define high value, whether it be a man or a woman, is based on two things. And I look at it through the lens of love and relationship, right? So one piece of the puzzle for high value is what would make somebody a universally good partner, right? So what is their level of emotional availability? How much self-awareness do they have? How invested in their own growth are they? How much healing have they done? How they're able to communicate? Those are all pieces that are universal traits that would make somebody high value through the lens of relationship and partnership. The other piece is what would make somebody high value to you? So what would make them a good partner to you? Would it be that you share the same lifestyle, right? If you have certain lifestyle goals, or you want someone who feels comfortable in the circles that you're in, if you share certain interests together. Now, I would want to caveat on that interests is not necessarily an indication of compatibility, right? So we also want to look at values that would also make somebody high value. So like I said, when I look at the term high value, I'm looking at it through the lens of partnership. So what would make this person high value to you? And so what's high value in the second bracket to one person might not matter to another person. And this is where it becomes really important to get clarity on not only who you're attracted to, but who would actually make a good partner to you.
The wires to me seem like they could get crossed. And this is, I assume, where you really dig in on coaching. I could see where coaching would solve this, maybe, or address this. Solve is a strong word. High value. So I can easily identify for me how I'm high value, right? And I can easily identify what I believe are high value traits in another partner.
Sure.
But still there could be a disconnect between those two people, because maybe I'm a little off on identifying that I am truly high value or have the high enough value for somebody else. How do I know, or how do I start to work on or identify if I have high value myself, or if I'm demanding something that I'm not willing to be of somebody else?
Yes. Well, that's the beautiful part of dating and relationships, is we will continue to date people who mirror back to us where we still have more work to do to become more whole. And so when you're looking at high value, well, if you are attracting certain partners who continue to reflect back to you, hey, the way you're communicating with me doesn't actually make me feel safe, doesn't make me feel loved. Well, that's where your work in lies. But so much of the time we see these reflections of ourselves, we see these parts of ourselves that we don't like, and we blame the other person, right? So, or we just say, I'm going to avoid this and run away. And our modern dating world makes that very easy with the illusion of so much option and choice. So in order to understand if you are quote unquote high value, it's important to take away the ego. Because when we're looking at, oh, I'm high value, so I deserve this person, or I don't deserve this person, well, then we're setting ourselves up to try and achieve love. And that's the quickest way to push it away. Because either you're looking at someone as above you or below you. And both of those are coming from a place of insecurity. Right? So there's insecurity, then there's arrogance or cockiness. Confidence is actually not seeing each other as separate at all, in my view. So
interesting.
Really important to look at, okay, maybe it's not that I'm not quote unquote high value enough, but there are parts of me that I'm avoiding actually looking at so I can become more whole for me and be able to experience an even more expansive partnership with the person I choose.
Can you give a common example? That's a really interesting way of putting it. I'm not going to say it as elegantly as you did, but essentially the thing that in the other person that I'm seeking is what I need to work on myself, or that I'm seeing in the other person that's like, you know, I have to work on that myself. What's a common example that you see in coaching men or women or couples or whatever it might be?
Yeah. So a lot of the times, especially with high performing men, they will get into relationships with women who they feel like they don't quite understand their emotions, right? So they get into relationships with these women, and the woman starts to show more depth into her emotion with him. But what happens is when you are not in touch with your own emotional landscape, with your heart, or you could say your feminine energy, and you see it reflected in someone else, well, if you've been rejecting that within yourself, then you're going to reject it in another person.
Oh, and that's so interesting.
And this is where I see so many high-performing men who are like, oh, I want this feminine woman. I want her to be nurturing and compassionate. Well, that same feminine woman is going to have waves of emotion, right? My fiance Mike calls it ocean energy. He's like, you got some ocean energy in you. But, you know, he understands that that's the ecosystem of me. And I'm fortunate enough to have a partner who's also been very invested in his own work and is can honor that feminine energy in both him and me. And so when you start to see emotions reflected back to you that you've been repressing yourself and you don't want to feel that, right? You're like, oh, no, I don't want to feel what she's feeling. And a lot of the times we will take on our partner's emotions because we see them as threatening, like, oh, if they're not okay, I can't be okay. But that's not healthy, right? Or especially as men, naturally, you want to solve. So you see a woman's emotion, you're like, how do I make this better? And she just wants to go through it, and she needs to go through it. And so do you. So a lot of the times we will start to see that. I mean, other examples are too, if you have subconscious fears of intimacy, abandonment, rejection, right? So we're talking about attachment theory. When you start to see your subconscious fears reflected in someone else. So if you have a fear of intimacy, right? So that comes from a fear of losing your freedom or your autonomy, and you see a woman who's asking you to show up for her in a certain way, right, in order to build more closeness in the partnership. Well, if you have a fear of intimacy, that's going to harp right there on feeling like, oh my gosh, my whole life is going to be revolved around making her happy. I'm not going to be able to step up to it. People are too needy. I'm going to fail. I might as well just end it now. Instead of going, oh my gosh, wow, this is bringing up a lot for me. I'm feeling like I actually can't show up. I'm feeling inferior. I'm feeling like I don't have the skills or the tools. Okay, let me look at this. Where is this coming from? And so much of the time, though, we go, oh, this isn't the right person for me. I need someone more independent. And we walk away.
That's a big bridge to build, though, for a lot of guys. I know it has been for me to go from what the hell is wrong with her? I always go back to, you ever see the nail on the forehead video on YouTube? Have you ever seen that?
I don't think so. No,
actually. Oh, I got to send it to you, Emily. Okay, it's hilarious. It's such a great, and for those, I actually threw this up on stage right before I interviewed Tom Bilyeu, because I was interviewing Tom Bilyeu on relationships, and I threw this video up in front of 300 guys, and they all, like every guy in the room got it. Essentially what it is a woman at initially, you know, she's the angle they have her at. You just see this woman like kind of sitting on the couch and trying to explain her emotions to her boyfriend and how she's feeling physically. She's like, I have this like pressure and it's like right here in the middle of my forehead and I just can't explain it. And then they kind of like change the angle and there's a nail in her forehead, like a nail from a hammer and nail kind of thing, just sticking in her forehead.
Yeah.
And her husband's staring at the nail going like, well, I think if you take the nail out of your forehead, and she's like, this is not about the nail. And they get into this fight until he just goes, that must be really hard. And she goes, oh, thank you for acknowledging that. Yeah. But that is really hard because that's what it's like for a guy. There's a nail in your forehead. You have this problem, this issue, like the fix is so clearly right there.
Yes.
If I'm hearing you. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry. Dive in.
I didn't mean to interrupt you. I was going to say we could also look at the flip side of that too, because so many women don't actually know how to access their feminine energy. And because our society is set up so much to honor more of the masculine, at times wounded masculine, but also healthy masculine energy, they go into fix it mode themselves. But what that does is it emasculates the man in the moment where he's trying to problem solve himself, right? And it puts both people in their masculine.
Let's dive into that real quick. That's really good. First, define feminine energy. When you say feminine energy, what are some phrases, words, definition? Give me a sense of what is feminine energy.
So feminine energy, we all have both energies within us, both masculine and feminine, right? Sacred energies. So the feminine is the nurturing, creative, open, loving, I already said nurturing, part of you, right? It's radiant and it comes from our heart. Right. So if you think of the masculine as the head and the feminine as the heart, and I think this was talked all the way back as far as men are from Mars and women are from Venus, right, is like the head and the heart. And when they come together, they are in harmony. So feminine energy is that flow. It's creativity. It's nurturing and compassion. And masculine is the logical, analytical. It's the leadership. A little bit of competition. You don't want to go too far in that though. Then it goes to wounded masculine. But as I said, it's the head, right? So it's the driver forward. So you could think, I always like to say, especially, you know, when you're an entrepreneur, you're a business owner, think of the masculine as, you know, your spreadsheets and you're building out a plan for the business. The feminine is where you get to create and allow inspiration to come in order to create that plan and bring it into fruition, right? To actually manifest it. So both are necessary and they're both within us, which is so powerful.
I'm assuming nature and nurture both seem to align women with feminine, men with masculine energy. Is that a fair statement?
Sure. You know, I've read a statistic that it's like about 80% of men are core masculine, 80% of women are core feminine. So, but you know, it's not really related on gender. Some men might feel like, oh, I have more core feminine energy. Some women might feel like they have more core masculine energy. It's just important to make sure that that's not actually programming, right? Subconscious blocks that are blocking you from your core energy because for some reason you feel more safe in the other energy because that's when it can become wounded. So like a lot of men will get stuck in their feminine energy because they've had experiences or lack experiences with men in their healthy masculine. And so they've rejected their definition of masculinity, thinking that's masculine energy. And same with women. It can also be, you know, when you've been hurt with the father wound or the mother wound and you're rejecting that energy. So I would say it's not related really on gender, but in when it comes to dating and relationships, if you are a man wanting a core feminine woman, if you feel like that's going to balance you out and feel really good to you, then you have to be in your masculine energy during the dating process in order to create polarity and attraction.
Wow. And in the example, like the nail on the forehead we were just talking about, the man by saying, what do you mean you have a pressure? I can see the pressure. I can fix it. Mm-hmm. In that moment, he's in his full masculine, it sounds like. Mm-hmm. She's in her feminine. You mentioned she may be not quite expressing her feminine, I don't want to say correctly, but either way, what is it that he is suppressing on his feminine side in that moment specifically? Does that make sense? Like, what is it that he is... What is the reflection back that he should be aware of so that he can say, wait a minute, why am I feeling this way in that moment with that example, if that's a fair question?
Yeah. So in that moment, what's likely happening is that he is it's not necessarily rejecting the feminine in that moment, but going into his core energy and wanting to lead and lead her where he thinks that she needs to go in order to not feel pain anymore, right? We never want someone we care about to be in pain. And so we do what we've always been taught and what we've been conditioned to do. So in that moment, it might not be actually like a lack of rejection happening, but more of just an awareness around part of being a great leader, men and women, is to understand who you're leading and what they actually need and how to support them, right? It's not always just about saying, this is where we're going, hop on board. It's about saying, this is where I'd love to go. What do you think is the best plan of action to get there, right? So in this situation, it's, I see there's a nail in your forehead. Is there something I can do to help alleviate that pain for you? What would help you feel better in this moment? And it's really important. I hear this from men all the time. Like, well, doesn't that make me sound weak? Like, I don't know what to do if I'm asking her what to do. Absolutely not. That is so much strength to just show up and say, how can I support you in this moment? And you'd be so surprised how many women or men, women, if you're asking a man this, they don't know. They don't know. And that's such a beautiful reflection moment. Like, what do you actually need to feel loved right now? Oh, actually, that sounds like something I can explore.
That's interesting. I was at a GoBundance event a couple weeks ago, and there was a speaker, a guy, a man, and again, men in the room. And he was speaking to the concept of masculinity, not as if it was always this way, but that at points, you being a, you know, high value man, a driven guy, a, you said the word earlier, a high performer, somebody like that, when their woman says something as simple as like, ah, the steak isn't cooked the way I wanted it to. In essence, not literally, his suggestion was like, that's the woman, the feminine, calling out for the masculine to take ownership. So in essence, stand up, caveman, and demand that her steak is done right by the waiter or waitress. That's a guy. That's his perspective speaking to a room full of guys. I'm curious how that lands with you.
Yes. I find it extremely attractive, and I know a lot of women do, when a man goes, oh, there's a problem in this situation. Let me make sure you're taken care of, especially in the dating process. And, you know, when you're pursuing a woman, yes, if her steak comes out to dinner and she doesn't like it, you can say, would you like another one? And if she goes, oh, no, I'm okay, that's an opportunity to say, are you sure? Are you sure you don't? I'd love to order you one that you actually enjoy eating. The issue and lies there is if a woman's not in touch or integrated in her feminine and able to receive that, right? That's where men get confused, because women are like, well, he was controlling, right? He sent back my steak. But in that moment, she's actually not allowing herself to receive what it is she truly desires, a perfectly cooked steak just the way that she wants it. I've never been one of those women. I am the woman to be like, excuse me, this is not done the way I wanted it to be done. But my work in that was then allowing a man to show up for me in that moment before I jumped in, right?
Interesting.
So, so making sure that I'm not becoming so self-sufficient that there's no room for that.
I get that. I get that. This makes me think of the role of feminism, or what feminism is right now. I've seen so many, there's these podcasts like the Whatever Podcast, and it's so confusing. Thank God I'm out of the dating pool, I say, in so many ways. But women today, it seems, I don't know, this might come across as ignorant, but I'll just, this is what it seems. Women today, especially younger women in the dating pool, maybe even older for men that are, you know, going back into the dating pool after years of marriage and getting divorced. But women today, it seems like for many men, want their cake and to eat it too. In other words, men don't rule me. I make my money. I do my thing. But at dinner, well, of course he should pay. What is that? Is that a woman not connected with her feminine? Is that just a bastardization of what feminism is supposed to be? Like, as a man listening right now, how do I deal with that? How do I work with that? And what's happening? Is that a wounded feminine? What is that?
Sure. Well, let me get some clarification, because what you're describing is a woman who is like, I take so much pride and ownership in my own independence and the fact that I can make money, but I still want a man to show up and pay for dinner. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, in essence. Yes, okay. Let's go with that. I think there's a little bit more of a toxic sound to it when some women say it. It's like, men suck. We don't need men.
Okay.
But I go on a date with a man and he should pay. It's not so, it's not as you presented it in a much more balanced, elegant way than what I see from a lot of women. Yeah, exactly. No, I'm saying like fervently independent, like
I don't need no man.
I don't need no man, but you're paying because you're a man.
Yes.
That. What is that?
So, yes, it's actually a rejection of the masculine and the feminine. When a woman is stuck in her masculine energy, some people call it like a masculine shield, right? Well, first off, if a woman is saying, I don't need a man, I don't need anyone, that's wounded masculine energy. And a lot of the times this happens because these women have not had influences in their life or interactions in their life with men that allowed them to feel safe. So what they're doing is they're ultimately putting up a defense mechanism of, I don't need you. So, you know, don't try to make yourself somebody that I need, but I still want to be treated like a woman. That is also, you know, if a woman is demanding certain behaviors from somebody in what I'm like getting from you is an entitled way, right?
Yeah.
That's also a disconnect from the feminine, because the feminine trusts that it's going to be provided for. It trusts that it's going to receive. This is not something I've ever said about myself before, but I'm feeling called to say it right now. And it may not be confrontational in any way. Or when I was dating, going on a first date, I never questioned if a man was going to offer to pay or not. It was not a part of my reality. And there have been women that I've worked with who are like, okay, so like, do I let him pay? Do I not let him pay? Do I offer to pay? What do I do? And I said, what feels good to you? What feels nourishing and wonderful to you in that moment? You know, as women, I mean, not all women, but a lot of women, myself included, there's a lot of preparation that goes into a date, and not just that night of getting ready for it, right? But your entire life is really revolved as a woman around finding that partner in that relationship, fortunately slash unfortunately, right? A lot of our worth is based on if we can find that or not. And so in that moment, for me personally, showing up on those dates, knowing that I was being honored for the thought and the effort that I would put toward even just that interaction or the interactions we've had, made me feel adored. It made me feel respected, right? It made me feel safe. And so it's important that as men and women, you get super clear on what feels good to you, right? For some men, that might not feel good to them. And that's okay too. There might be a woman out there where it doesn't feel good to her to have someone pay for the entire bill and she wants to split it. That's not to say it doesn't change later in the relationship, right? We're talking about a first date. I want to make that clear.
Sure.
So, you know, I think it's important, and I've gone on a total tangent from your original question.
No, it's great.
This comes up a lot around, okay, in our modern dating world, what does it look like to date? And that's what can make it both so confusing, but also so freeing, because you get to choose and then you get to manifest in the person and the dynamic that feels good to you.
Yeah. If you're a guy that has maybe, you know, that's not in the early part of the dating, you know, 20, 25, 30, sure. But maybe you were married or you were with somebody long term and now you're back on the market, let's say. What are some of the challenges that men may not realize they face in re-entering the dating market? What are some of the patterns or challenges that only with reflection can they really be seen as you work with people like this that are fairly common that might help somebody listening right now?
So when you've gone through something like a divorce or you've been through a number of different heartbreaks or betrayals, there is a certain level of healing that you will be responsible for doing within yourself before you can truly invite somebody into your life. And so what happens is a lot of men or women get out of a divorce and they get back into the dating world and they're like, I'll just find someone better. I'm just going to find someone better, right? If they're ready to get back in. Other times it's an avoidance of it, right? You know, the wounds can show up in two ways. One is, okay, I'm going to get back out there and get the love I've always wanted, or I'm just going to be with myself right now. And both can be done in a healthy way and both can be done in an unhealthy way. It's just a matter of your intention and thoughts around it. So
makes sense.
When getting back out into the dating world, I see a lot of people think, I'm going to meet this person. We clicked on the first date. It felt really good. So I'm going to start like messaging them all the time. And now we're dating and it's the third date and we're dating. And then they get to the fourth date and it ends. And they're absolutely taken aback by it because decades ago or however long ago when they were dating before, it was more like that. Right? It was more this person, we like each other and we're going to try and just be together. And, you know, for better or for worse now, people have more ideals of what they're looking for in partnership and combine that with people who have now been hurt and haven't taken ownership of healing that hurt. Well, there's a lot of stuff to run from. So it brings us back to the beginning of our conversation, right? Where when you start seeing that mirror, so there can be levels of avoidance in the dating world that people aren't quite sure how to navigate. It's also important to recognize that and understand the patterns in your marriage before to really know what you actually need in a new partnership. Because a lot of the times we get out of a relationship or a marriage and we go, okay, well, I didn't like this about my partner, which means I need to look for this in someone new. But what happens is that's not actually where the disconnect was in the partnership, and we don't have full clarity over the disconnect. We're making assumptions based on our own programming and our own thoughts and beliefs. And we end up actually in a partnership with a very similar dynamic. So for example, if you were with someone and you're like, well, she always nagged me, right? She nagged me our entire marriage. And then I didn't feel like the man and I, you know, our sex life went away and everything like that. And so now I want to make sure that I'm in a relationship with a woman who is very sweet and quiet and who's really embodied and we have great sexual chemistry together. And I make sure that sex is something really important to her. Well, what happens then is if you're not actually healing the wounds around why you were with someone nagging you and where your part was and all of that, well, maybe now you've attracted a woman who on the first few dates seems really sweet, really like there to support you, when in reality, she's repressing all of her needs and desires and actually has no idea what they are. And then you get back into the same sort of dynamic that you were in your previous relationship in order to, again, mirror back to you where there's still more wholeness that needs to be created.
You talked about being drawn. I'm being like, what's the origin of this for you? This is a really, really interesting, it feels like there's pain experience, something that you can hearken to for the fact that you are so focused on dating and relationships,
yeah.
But specifically until now, I know you work with women as well, but men,
yeah.
And high value men, high performing men, like where does this come from for you?
Yes. It's a lifelong story. And every podcast I'm on, I'm like, how do I make this shorter? But I want to talk about, because I mean, from a very young age, I was always boy crazy, right? I loved the idea of love. Relationships were such a focus of me. I mean, I had a boyfriend in preschool, okay? I got married on the playground. There's a photo of me in my closet when I was 3 dressed up as a bride. So this was something that I was put on the planet to focus on, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And so what that did was it led me into really being so open and desiring of romantic love. And flash forward into, you know, my early adult life, I had gotten into 2 back-to-back long-term relationships that both ended, one that was 5.5 years, another that was 2 years. And I got out of those relationships feeling broken. I felt like there was something wrong with me. I felt like I was never going to get what I desired the most, which was to have a partner to share my life with and feel nurtured and cared for and protected and provided by this man who just loved me so much. And I felt like maybe I would never be accepted. And maybe that just, you know, I'd have to hide parts of myself. And I didn't know what parts I was supposed to hide and which parts I was supposed to reveal. So I was left with feeling very insecure. And I'd never really felt that in my life before. I was very naturally confident as a young girl and woman and confident in my ability to get what it is that I desired. And here I was recognizing that I had patterns that weren't working. And it took me a little bit longer to actually recognize what those patterns were. I initially thought, okay, cool, I'm going to get out of this breakup now after the 2-year one and do the same thing I did before and just find somebody else. And the beautiful part of life is your plans aren't always what the universe has planned for you and usually knows better, right? Universe, God, source, whatever term you want to use there. And the universe was like, nope, this pattern stops now. It stops now because you are going to find wholeness within you, not somebody else. And so I got back out into the dating world after now understanding thought work better, right? So in order to feel more confident getting back into the dating world, I found thought work and recognized just because I think it doesn't make it true, which for a lot of very intellectual high performers, that's a moment where you're like, okay, what? I feel so free. And like, why did nobody tell me this? Because especially if you're intellectual, you're like, well, yeah, that's like true. I can rationalize that's true. And when you recognize that you actually get to choose whatever it is you want to believe, like, wow, that's so freeing. So I got myself back out into the dating world, late 20s. And I was living in the Bay Area, California, and I got online and I'd only had like a little bit of experience with online dating. And I felt like the world was at my fingertips. I was so excited. I was like, wow, this is going to be so easy and fun. And look at all these amazing men who I get to interact with and meet. And I mean, there were dates where I was going on dates with, you know, entrepreneurs. I wasn't an entrepreneur yet at the time. I was living vicariously through all of them. Yeah. And even just learning and being there and understanding somebody else was so exciting to me. But then it kind of lost its shininess after, you know, I would go on 2 dates, done, 3 dates, done, 2 months, done. And so I started to think there must be something that I'm doing wrong. And so I started diving into attraction and, you know, texting tips and all of these different things that ultimately led me to even more confused because it still wasn't working. Then I stumbled upon attachment theory. I read the book Attached, and that opened up my world because every single illogical piece of my love life now became logical. Why I could be so confident in the rest of my life and feel so insecure as soon as I would have like feelings or even just like a guy and be anxious and worried about what he thought, all of a sudden made sense to me. And the dynamics in my past relationships made sense to me. I even had one of those exes come and go, you know, I was dismissive, avoidant. I'm like, I do. Yes. Yes, I do. Thank you. I appreciate you also doing your healing. It's so wonderful. Both of them. So from there, I started diving into that.
Real quick, before you go, I want to pause there for a second because attachment theory is fascinating to me as well. My wife also similarly stumbled upon it. And it's one of those things like, why don't more people know about this? Mm-hmm. Why don't people know about their attachment styles? I think there's 4, right? Are there 4 attachment styles?
Yes, there's 4.
Can you articulate those attachment styles first? And then I'd love to hear what yours is.
Yes. And Jamie, I told you the story was not short. So we can finish it later because gets real good.
It's okay. We'll come back. But the attachment thing is going to lose some people. So I want to make sure what is she talking about?
So attachment theory, yes, there are 4 attachment styles, which is anxious, avoidant, also called fearful, avoidant, and secure. And in my coaching, I like to call it attachment tendencies versus attachment style because I find that there's more flow to them. It depends on the person you're dating. It depends on, you know, what's going on in your life. And sometimes we can show up more anxious. Other times we can show up more avoidant or fearful avoidant. So those are the 4 main only 4 attachment styles. And they all come from a subconscious fear or a fear of abandonment, which would be your anxious attachers, a fear of intimacy, which is avoidant, fear of rejection, which is anxious avoidant or fearful avoidant. And then secure is comfortable with intimacy. They're comfortable with conflict resolution. They're comfortable sharing their life with someone. So
is there like a general percentage assigned to, especially secure? A lot of people might be like, no, I'm secure. No, you're not secure. I have never read this. Is there like, you know, a percentage of the population that's just, I know it's not scientific, but that's thought to be like secure versus anxious or avoidant or fearful or anxious avoidant? Like, is there a sense of that?
Yeah, I wouldn't have a number that I would feel comfortable throwing out just because I haven't read a statistic on it. And I wouldn't say that I can just pull that up on the top of my head right now. But working with singles in dating and people who are getting into relationships later in life as well, the percentage of people who are true secures is far lower, right? That might sound discouraging, and I don't want anyone to take that as a limiting belief that, okay, I have to take the breadcrumbs that this avoidant person is giving me because finding anyone in this day and age, like, I should just settle for this. No, that's not what I'm talking about. But yeah, the more we can talk about this, the more people can recognize their patterns and start to become more secure, right? Earned secure is something like a term out there.
Oh, I like that. I haven't heard that. Earned secure. Yeah.
So, you know, being able to show up more secure in partnership. And one of the issues I see in like where people will give advice is around in these books, they'll say, well, just find a secure person and that's going to help with your attachment tendencies. And it's true. Having a secure partner really helps with that. I can say my partner is very secure, right? He's going to have his own other insecure tendencies, but he didn't have the level of avoidance that I had in other partners where I felt a lot more anxious. I actually started on dates. I would know how avoidant someone was because of how anxious I was so in tune with that, like with my emotions at that point, where I would leave a date and instead of thinking, oh, I must have done something wrong, I feel anxious, I'm like, wow, there is some avoidance in this man. So I feel it, right? I felt his guard up. Yeah, and that's not to put labels on people. You don't usually know what someone's attachment is on a first date. I just want to put that out there. That was just hypothesis in that moment. Yes.
Makes sense. And I think it's just what you just described. It's like seeing behind the curtain a little bit. It's almost like disc profiles. Have you ever done a disc profile? Some people them, some people don't, but it's just a way of like, oh, okay. I get like that person's an I, so they're more gregarious and outgoing and they don't want to do the analysis. That's a C, right? Kind of thing. Yes. It's the same sort of thing. It's not like you can just diagnose somebody as this level of disc or this avoidant or I'm sorry, or this attachment style. But it sounds like what it did for you, and maybe you can parlay this back into your story. We can come back to your specific style. But it sounds like for you, this revelation, this peeling back the curtain, it gave you just another way or a different perspective on dating at that point, which opened up a whole other window for you. Is that fair?
100%. It took the blame off of just me. I always blamed myself. I always blame myself for having messed it up or done something wrong or being too needy or too emotional or whatever it was. And attachment theory allowed me to go, oh, nothing happens in a vacuum. Nothing happens in a vacuum. So I can't take full responsibility. Where I could take more responsibility is in the men I was choosing to date, right? Were they really allowing me to feel seen and heard in the way that would make me feel safe? Or were they harping more on those core wounds through their core wounds, right? Oh, so, because we'll reflect back to each other, right? So if I have a fear of abandonment or a fear of rejection, and they have a fear of intimacy, well, my desire for more closeness is going to trigger their fear of losing their autonomy. And my fear of abandonment and rejection, when they pull away or they're trying to do their own thing, it's going to pull on my wounds. So that's called the anxious avoidant trap.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Is there a way for people to, in an easy way, like somebody hearing this for the first time, I'm just imagining this, say they're married or they're not, they're dating. Mm-hmm. Because even in that was for me and my wife, understanding what we each are. I think I'm more anxious. She's more avoidant.
Okay.
I'm closer to secure than she is.
Okay.
She admits that, but I think that some of that comes from just our past, our upbringing, whatever. But still, I have my anxious, right? Like, you know, like you don't love me enough. And for her, it's like, as soon as she feels that, it's like, I want to push you further away, right? Mm-hmm. She's got that avoidant energy. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we read articles, we do this, we do that. But if somebody's sitting out there hearing this for the first time, maybe thinking about their spouse and, okay, anxious, I get that, like gripping or like, you know, I need this attention, avoidant, pushing away. What are some things that people can do to identify this on a first date in their spouse or whatever it might be? Is there anything that they can do other than just go read an article somewhere to start to begin to understand what they may be and what their partner may be?
Sure. Well, yes, there are quizzes online that you can take in that too. I also, in my course, help you identify what your attachment tendencies are by looking at your behavior patterns, right? So there are certain behaviors that someone with more of an anxious attachment style or anxious tendencies will have versus someone with avoidant tendencies, right? So the issue happens, though, is that on a first date, people can appear different than their actual or
I was going to ask you that. How do you see through it, especially when you're early in the dating process? But go ahead. I'm sorry.
Boundaries. Boundaries help you understand people better, and it helps them understand you better. And what happens is we take the people that we're dating for face value and go, okay, this person's showing up for me. This is so exciting. You know, I can't wait. And what happens then is we set no boundaries. We, you know, kind of are doing everything to try to please this person, right? Especially if you have more anxious tendencies, but also if you have more avoidant tendencies, that can happen because you are still lacking the ability to communicate boundaries, right? So what happens is if we don't set those boundaries, we don't see how someone's actually going to honor them and show up. So by, you know, on, I wouldn't say a first date, but in dating someone, to see what happens if you say, hey, you know, I'm actually not available that night. I would love to see you next Tuesday, but I'm going out with my buddies that night. Right. And instead of going, oh God, she's going to like get upset about it. And like, I need to protect my freedom right now. Like, let's see if she's going to like, you know, say that I can't go or she'll pull away now. Right. Cause we're, what we think is what we create. So, or doing the opposite of, oh my God, I need to cancel plans with my friends. Otherwise she might not see me next week. I'm going to lose my chance. Right. We actually get to see how that person is going to show up for us in that moment. And by releasing those stories and expectations, we get to actually see it. We get to see it through the like an open lens of let me have what's called like equanimity in this situation and a loss of attachment to what's going to happen and instead just experience this person. But in order to do that, we have to first understand what our stories are, our limiting beliefs, understand where they came from, and then also make sure that we are rewriting those stories to create what it is we actually desire. And that's one of the major parts of my coaching is to help you do that. Because if you have certain stories, well, you're going to keep reliving them again and again. Because you're seeing them through that lens. You're seeing your reality through that lens.
If you're, by the way, that's popping for me too. This is why in person's better, Emily. I said, I wish I could have gotten this.
I know, it would have been so fun. That's okay. Next time.
Everything's still working here. Yes. But all right. So if you, I almost picture this like, you do the research, you know, you're an avoidant type or you're an anxious type. So you're sort of planting seeds, boundaries. You're establishing these boundaries to see how the reaction is. What do you do with that information? Is it, okay, I'm more of an avoidant type or whatever it is, and I establish this boundary and the person reacts in the anxious way. Is it like, there you go, signal received, I'm out? Or is there something that you do with that information at that point? You know, there's still potentially attraction, be it physical, sexual, energetic, intellectual attraction, but this attachment thing is there. Is it like, you're avoidant, she's revealed herself as anxious, get the F out. Like, what happens now?
Right, right. No, I would, well, yes and no. So I want to make sure that people are aware that you are allowed to have deal breakers. You are allowed to say, this is how I want someone to show up for me in partnership, or this is something that's really important to me, i.e., I want someone who's going to want a family. Right. Yeah. So it's okay to have those boundaries. And I also want to caveat that boundaries start with internal boundaries. So if you have an anxious style, how often are you allowing yourself to think about that person? Right. How much thought are you allowing to go into that person? And at what point will that increase? And getting really clear on that. And same with, you know, if you're more avoidant, like what is the pacing? Right. A lot of people with avoidant attachment styles will actually rush into a relationship and then pull out as soon as there's a certain level of intimacy, right? They'll want to avoid and leave. So if you are dating somebody and you notice that they have maybe opposing attachment tendencies, which is highly likely because it does create a level of polarity to have that opposition, which is also why it's really important to be integrated into your masculine or feminine. So that's more of the polarity versus the polarity of like, this person's going to hurt me, right? So in those moments, what you can do is first, it's important to check in with yourself around what's being activated in me right now based on their behavior. oh, it's this feeling of like, I always have to be on guard that someone's going to leave me, or like, I have to make sure that I'm always keeping tabs on where their energy is at. Does their energy still feel like it's on, as on me as before, right? If you are noticing more avoidance in somebody and maybe they're not interacting with you as much as you wanted them to. So the first step is to always look within yourself. The next thing is to then observe and allow yourself to see what's going on with that person before coming to them and saying, hey, I noticed this tendency in you, right? We don't want to start making someone feeling like we're coaching or, you know, therapizing them or anything through the dating process. That wouldn't be very romantic. What you can do at a certain point, and this is kind of speaking vaguely because there's so many different opportunities for to sure. create more closeness, right? And so it's important to look at, okay, if I look at this situation through the lens of how would I want to create more closeness in this? Because a lot of the times what we do is we see those kind of quote unquote scary signals or yellow, orange, red flags, and we distance ourselves. We go, okay, this person could hurt me. Let me distance myself. Well, what that does is if you have a story that someone's always going to leave you, you're always going to get hurt, you're never going to be able to show up for someone, people are too needy, now your subconscious is happy because it knows it's going to end because you're deciding already it's going to end. But what happens is a lot of people stay in it. And that's how you get yourself into a relationship where there's a lot of disconnect because one person now feels a sense of responsibility because they feel like they should be in a relationship with this person, usually more of the avoidant tendency. And the anxious person is, you know, grasping on for dear life, hoping to feel love and hoping to feel acceptance and safety. So in those moments, what you can do is you don't always need to go to somebody and say, I've noticed this, like I said, I've noticed this thing in you and it hurts me when you do this, because especially if you're in the first few dates, that's, you know, it's a little, it might be pushing the timeline a little bit, but you can open up conversations in the dating process around when relationship, like I'm so excited to experience X, Y, and Z with the person I end up with. And I just know that X, Y, and Z allows me to feel so safe and happy in a partnership. And I really value when someone does X, Y, and Z in a partnership. What do you think? What do you value? What feels good to you? So much of the time we want to hide our past. We want to hide our tendencies because we think we're going to be judged. But when we find a partner who actually is curious about them in order to help meet us where we're at, right? Not try to change us, but meet us where we're at. So that way they're like, oh, I know this about Emily. You know, I know this about Jamie that, you know, when if I say X, Y, and Z, it might activate this wound. How can I say this more carefully? Then we can actually show up in more love in our partnership instead of going, oh, their wound is going to hurt me. It's going to screw up my life because they're going to be too needy or they're never going to give me the love that I've always wanted. And we go to these doomsday sort of scenarios. And so part of dating is to release impulsivity and replace it with intentionality.
I like that. What was it? So you had these two back-to-back relationships. Mm-hmm. Now you're engaged to Mike. I know Mike, you know, author, investor, coach, podcaster now. Mm-hmm. What is it? It's like you're in the space of being able to sort of see layers, like the Matrix, right? Mm-hmm. Like you could see all the code that's happening running behind the scene while you're in this dating process. What is it that made you say, somebody who is obviously really tuned in and works mm-hmm. with high value, high performing men as much as you do, mm-hmm. what is it in the dynamics of the relationship with Mike that made you say, yes, this is the one I'm going to marry?
Oh, it makes me emotional. He really saw me and saw right through me to the point where I had my guard up a little bit at the beginning because I was like, if this guy wanted to manipulate me, he could. Like, he really gets what makes me feel so adored. I mean, he also showed up so intentionally. So I was living in San Diego at the time. He was living in Scottsdale. And we had been FaceTiming for a few weeks and he would send me video notes, these like 3-minute video notes where, you know, I'm building my business. I'm probably like 80 hour weeks at that point in time. And here's this video from this guy in Scottsdale. And I'm like, okay, I have to watch this video and then I'm going to have to send him one back. Okay. So it would take me like 8 hours sometimes to get back to him, but he didn't flinch. Right? He would just come back with another video. So there was this level of intentionality. And then also I got to a point where I was like, well, maybe this is just going to be a FaceTime thing that'll end in a couple more weeks. We're on a FaceTime. He's like, I'm going to fly out to San Diego next Tuesday and take you out to dinner. And I said, just dinner. He said, yes, just dinner. And so it was that level of confidence that I saw in him where he's a man who, when he knows what he wants, he goes after it and he goes after it unapologetically. And I, at the time, really needed that because I had so much going on and it really drew me to him. But what really allowed me to feel like he was the one was how safe I felt being myself, even, you know, experiencing, we would go back and forth. So of course there was a little bit of like this, like quasi like living together situation, right? When we'd go back and forth. And I had so much fear around being scrutinized because of past experiences. And I felt so much freedom just being around him. Like there was no judgment on me. He didn't see the things I did as threatening to him. He was so secure within himself that I was free to be me. And he just really has always loved me through all of it. And we've both healed and grown even more together. And that's what's also so beautiful is you recognize when you get into a partnership, oh, there's some more left there. And it's about finding the person who's going to support that growth and not be threatened by it or not support you in it, where you both can literally skyrocket as individuals and in the relationship. And, you know, I just feel like there was this level of love and acceptance, and I was never expected to be perfect. And I always had put that pressure on myself to be perfect. So he gave me kind of the permission to be whatever I am.
I love the point you made about healing together. Mm-hmm. Like that's been a dynamic in my marriage over the last 14 years now, 15 years together, 14 years married. And I've said this before, and I don't know if this is the right way of putting it, but it's like, I think every relationship needs to die and be reborn multiple times if it's going to last. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is, you know, you are not you, but like people start out, I start out as a single guy with certain ambitions and goals. Mm-hmm. And then I meet this other energy, this other person, and I'm with this person and we are these people for a while. And it's like, oh yeah, so much compatibility to your point. You know, we feel safe with one another. We feel good. It's like, wow, we're pushing each other. And then there's, you know, there's marriage and it's like not much different, but somewhat different. There's something, you know, mentally about like, okay, we're married, you know,
sure.
Like something about the idea, right?
You're in it.
And then you have kids, right? Or careers change or, you know, levels go up for you income wise, status wise, whatever it might be. And you're always doing this as an individual. And it's like to keep two individuals that are standing on two sides of a boat that's getting bigger and bigger. And your different weights and different sizes as you go along, right? Like mm-hmm. the only way to keep that going is to acknowledge that we're not the people we were a year, two, three, 5 years ago. We're not together. And we need to grow into the people that we are today. Now mm-hmm. we have the other labels, the other aspects to us. We're parents. There's different worries. There's different this, different that. So it's a really interesting thing. Like you said, like healing together, it makes so much sense that it is essential to be with somebody else. You said it at the very beginning as well, like how much healing you've done to understand that dynamic with one another as you start.
Yes.
And I believe, and this is where I want your thoughts, because you deal with guys that are maybe on the other side or women on the other side have gone 20 years of marriage and they're back in the dating pool. And I'm sure there's some that comes out about their time being married. But in my mind, what kills marriages is that people don't kill their marriage. Mm-hmm. In other words, what kills the marriage is like, I was 24, she was 23. This is who we were. We locked it in with a white dress and a black dress.
Yeah.
That's it, right? Mm-hmm. And despite the fact that we're growing as individuals, like we just like hold on. And, you know, some marriages last that way, but we hold on to this thing that we were on the day we were married, meaning for the other person.
Yes.
And we never allow us to say like, that's not who she is anymore. She doesn't look like that anymore. Mm-hmm. He doesn't feel like that. He doesn't think like that anymore. She's on her personal development journey. Like, all her woo woo bullshit, right? Like we lock into who you're supposed to be from the day that we were married and we don't continue to kill off the versions of who we are individually and grow at the same time into something bigger and something more aligned as we go. I think that's what I'm doing right in my marriage and what my wife and I are doing right in my marriage. Throwing that at you. Yeah. What lands for you? What do you take from that? What is your perspective? What have you seen in the work you've done? The key to life, it isn't money. It's happiness. And when you measure how happy you are, you actually become even more happy. Our friends at GoBundance, the tribe of millionaires, use a very specific tool to measure their happiness. It's called the Life Happiness Index. And you can have it too. Go over to GoBundance.com/LHI and take your Life Happiness Index assessment. You'll rate yourself in multiple categories on exactly how happy you are and get a custom output for you specifically that you can use in developing whatever goals you have for your life. GoBundance is the tribe of healthy, wealthy, generous people who choose to live epic lives. And the tool GoBundance members use at the base of all of that is the Life Happiness Index. Get out there and grab life big.
I mean, the first thing that I thought was, thank God we don't have the same relationship for the rest of our lives, but it, you know, right? The same person. Like that to me sounds extremely boring, right? I mean, I would never have chosen a life for myself just being a single woman where I had to stay the same for the rest of my life. You know, obviously, and if you're listening to this podcast, it's likely because you gravitate towards that work. So what's important is to... And I've experienced this in partnership is to make sure that you, especially if you have a fear of abandonment, a fear of rejection, right? That subconscious fear, to know that change doesn't mean that you're going to be left behind or that you're going to be left or that things are going to crumble apart. And there was parts of my past that definitely fed into that. But to know that you can get stronger together and to trust in that and to also allow the other person to have the freedom to grow and to not try to control that, right? Because when we get into fear, we want to control. We want to know what the outcome is, but we don't know what the outcome is. And somebody growing is likely going to help your relationship get stronger versus them staying stagnant. Well, yeah, eventually, you know, you may grow apart or you're just stagnant. And if you're a, you know, a high performer, then that's death, right? Like if you're stagnant, my gosh, that's what we're all like avoiding over here, right? Is we want to live a full life. We want to make impact. We want to experience things that not everyone else gets to experience. And you have that opportunity to do that in a partnership when you choose somebody who also has that same mission and goal. And that's where values come in, right? So really, the first thing I looked for in a partner was what is his relationship with his own growth? And so knowing that he also had that as a big pillar of, you know, his own value set was huge. That was something that was really important to me. And I'm so grateful that I listened to that and that I didn't sacrifice that because, you know, a lot of the times too, high performers get worried about being bored in a partnership. And partnership is not boring, but what they think is, oh, if I have a stable partnership that's not fighting, that's not like these breakups and, you know, makeup sex with it, whatever, it's going to be boring or this like intense fire attraction all the time, right? Then I'm not going to be satisfied. My eyes are going to wander, et cetera, et cetera. Well, if you can make it your mission to see how much the two of you can grow, and now growth doesn't always mean discomfort and like changing yourself and tweaking yourself. Growth can also be, how much more can I love me? How much more can I love this person for where they're at? And that might be the growth and the work that you need to do in order to truly connect with them and stop trying to fix everything.
I love that. The way you said it at the jump was really good. You said it's boring to be in a relationship with the same person. Isn't that like every Matthew McConaughey rom-com that they say to, you know, like to the man, like, you want to be with the same woman the rest of your life? But you're right. Like that is essentially, that's the myth. Like it's not a different human being, but it's a different person at different levels. Mm-hmm. And to your point, like growth could simply be a conversation about something you want to try sexually, something you want to try intimately, a place you want. We moved to the Dominican Republic, right? That was a growth move for both me and my wife and our family. So for the two of us together, you know, that creates another, I don't know, it creates another dynamic to the relationship that's fun, that's sexy, that's interesting, that creates like, you know, newness in the relationship, even though it's a family sort of move. So I like that point. That's sort of like taking the whole idea of like, how could you be trapped with one man or one woman? Like, no, you're right. You shouldn't be. It's going to be a different version of the same person, a different version of the same human being as you go on. But it, I mean, my wife was 24, I was 30. I'm 45, she's 39. So for the two of us, like she's not who I met at 24, not even close.
And I would hope not, right? That's like pivotal growth years. Yes.
Exactly. But there's people that do. I shouldn't say there's people. I hate saying that. But I know that it exists, that relationship exists. Like, I don't even know who you are anymore. In other words, I met you and froze you where you were when we first met, right up through our wedding day. That's you. And this version of you today is not that, therefore, contract violated. You're not who you said you were. And yeah, I think allowing growth is a great, great way to articulate the beginning of a relationship. That's the value that you have. Like, does this person allow me to grow? And is he on his growth journey? So
yes,
really good, Emily. Really good. That's very interesting. I know we're right at the time here. I don't want to belabor anything with you. I don't want to take more of your time than I can, but where could people, like, getting coaching in this space is so important. I know you've it's right out there. You've coached high performer, like Danny Morrell admitted it, like, hey, you were my coach, right? At some point. So you've worked with some of the most high achieving men in the world. How does somebody listening to this reach out, learn more, get to know you more, understand what programs you have, and so on and so forth?
Well, the best place to find me is on Instagram. So that's Emily Freeman Coaching. I'm sure you're going to put it in the notes of the show. And on that Instagram, of course, take a look at everything that I put out there. And then also make sure to click the link in my bio. When you click the link in my bio, what you're going to find are a number of different ways that you can work with me. One is my VIP program. So this is for the men and women now who are ready to get that customized, high-touch approach to coaching. So that means I'm with you every step of the way. So you're not only going to get coaching calls with me, you also get WhatsApp with me. So you literally have me in the palm of your hand when you need something in real time. And this really allows us to deepen the work and also make sure that I act a little bit as like the training wheels while we're reprogramming some things to make sure we're not going back into old programming. So it's a really powerful container that you get to be in with me. And there's only a select number of those available in order for my energy to really go towards you. Another way that you can start doing and diving into this work is in my course, Masculine in Love. So this is a digital self-study course where you are going to be taken through first the reprogramming process, right? Understanding your attachment tendencies, understanding your limiting beliefs. Then you're going to go through identifying who your dream woman is, right? So all the way down to those core values and understanding, what am I actually looking for, right? Because a lot of us are like, I'm ready for a relationship. This is what I want. And then we get it all down on paper and we recognize, okay, yes, I do want a relationship, but it actually looks a lot different than what I had in mind. And then actually how to become an energetic match for that woman. We talked about this a little bit at the beginning with the high value. How do you know if you're high value? Well, how do you know if you're an energetic match for somebody? So looking at making sure that those two are aligned. And then of course, it goes into how to optimize your dating profile, how to optimize your communication strategy around those initial touch points, how to meet women in person, what that looks like. And then of course, getting into integrating into your healthy masculine and feminine energy, how to create polarity, gets into some flirtation, and then also communication and boundaries. So it really sets you up to not only be able to attract a woman into your life, because I work with men who have trouble attracting women, but I also work with a lot of men who can attract women, but it's about attracting the right woman and then actually being able to keep her. So how do you set yourself up for success from the moment that you get online or that you go out and you see her, to know that you are going to build a lasting partnership, not just get into something, have some attraction tips, and then they're going to leave, right? Because that was a lot of my pain in dating. So those are two ways to work with me. And the application process, you're just going to go through an application process for the VIP. I reach out to you personally. So you'll get an email back from me personally. And then Masculine in Love, you get access to an exclusive Facebook group where you're going to be with all the other men in the course to have that level of support.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. Emily, I appreciate you coming on. Thanks for sharing and going deep on some of these concepts. Really, really fun. Really, really interesting. And yeah, we'll stay in touch. I appreciate you.
Yeah. Thank you so much. This was super fun.